You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, folks, welcome back to the third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast of TPC, Saturday, June 23rd, year of our Lord, 2018. Now, Michael Hill, Dr. Hill, has been appearing with us since, for as long as I can remember anyway. And we always introduce Dr. Michael Hill as, of course, the president of the League of the South, which he still is, a retired university professor, and the author of two books on Celtic warfare. And we give him that introduction every time he's come on. He's come on many, many times over the years. And it just dawned on me a few weeks ago that of all of the appearances that he's done with us, we have never talked to him about his books. How could that have happened? It's just one of those things that just seems so glaringly obvious that surely one of those interviews we would have talked to him about his books. But we never have. And then it further occurred to me, an epiphany, that we should offer the book as the incentive to a fundraiser drive. So I got in touch with Michael, about a month and a half ago, maybe 2 months ago. Who can say, because time blurs these days. But I said, let's do this. Let's do your book. You can autograph it. We'll move some copies, and we'll raise money for the show and get the book a wider readership and all good things. And he graciously agreed to do that. And I believe that a shipment of books just arrived at his house today. And he'll be autographing those for TPC listeners. And then I'll be down there with Dr. Hill next week to participate in the League of the South's annual conference, and I'm going to pick up those books, drop them back home, and mail them out to everyone who donates $100 or more to TPC this month. Michael, does that just about cover it?
James, that just about covers it, my friend. I'm glad to be back on with you, and yeah, let's talk about my books tonight.
Well, let's definitely do that. Let's do that, and we are going to do that, and we're going to spend the bulk of the hour doing that. But before we do that, just to delay it just a few more minutes, after all these years, I guess we can delay it. Five more minutes, and only because we have another worthy interruption to the coverage of the book, and that is next week's aforementioned League of the South conference. So let's do this first, and then we'll get into the books for the rest of the hour. I mentioned that I'll be driving down there to participate in that conference and to collect the books and drive them back up to Memphis. We like to save shipping and kill two birds with one stone and all of that. But is it too late for people to attend the meeting if they haven't already registered? And what information can you give the audience at large about next week's festivities in Wetumpka?
Well, no, it is not too late. People can register at the door. In fact, probably half or more of the people who show up every year just wait and register at the door. That's something you can certainly do. If you want information on the upcoming conference, which, by the way, is next Friday and Saturday in Wetumpka, Alabama, where the Southern Culture Center is located. We've been in that building for the conference now. I think this will be the eighth year in a row. And you can go to www.leagueofthesouth.com, and you can read about the conference. Read the agenda, see who's going to be on there, including yourself, giving a great speech, and Dr. David Duke and several other good speakers will be speaking this weekend. And it's got a listing on there of local lodging places and instructions about how to get to the building and things like that. So, no, it's certainly not past time for someone to say, hey, you know, I think I want to be there next weekend. And we always have a great time. The place we're going to have this is out in the rural area in central Alabama. And somebody asked me today, reckon Antifa and Black Lives Matter will show up? They better not. It's out in rural Alabama on private property and with a great, great deal of security. So it's a safe place. We don't have no news media is being permitted there. People won't get doxxed or whatever they call it, exposed, you know, identified. And we just got a great lineup of speakers, and we always have a great time. A bunch of Southern nationalists getting together and you know, doing some serious stuff, but also having a lot of fun, you know, renewing old acquaintances and meeting new people and just having a lot of fun. So we're very glad that you're going to be with us, James, and you're going to add a lot to the program, and just really looking forward to having everybody there.
Well, I'm looking forward to being there, my friend, and I, of course, enjoyed being with you last week at the conference in Nashville, enjoying having you on the air tonight, and then seeing you again next week in Alabama. That's 3 weeks in a row. I'm spending the month of June with you,
brother. Absolutely. I did get that shipment of books in yesterday, and if you want me to, I'll go ahead and start autographing those things.
Yeah, you can sign them. I received your message on Twitter before you were kicked off Twitter this afternoon, so I couldn't respond to you. So I'm glad we can take care of business here right now.
Yeah.
So you inscribe those however you'd like, and we won't personalize them because the orders are still coming in. But yes, any way you'd like, and we'll get those out next week after I return back home. But again, so that is next Friday and Saturday, I believe, in Wetumpka, Alabama, and where is all the website where people can get all the information one last time, Dr. Hill?
Yes, it's www.leagueofthesouth.com. You can click on the link at the top of the page, which says 2018 National Conference, and it'll bring everything up you need to find out about the conference, the agenda. And it's even got a printout there where you can pre-register if you want to. I would suggest that if you're going to pre-register, you drop it in the mail no later than Monday. Any later than that, we may not get it before I leave on Thursday. So you might just want to wait and register at the door if you hadn't done so already.
All right. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That's the website. Those are the dates. This is not a Friday through Sunday conference. Am I right about that, Dr. Hill? It is just a Friday and Saturday affair.
That's right. Well, I will say this. We have a Bible study church service at the building there on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. So
fantastic.
In that sense, people are welcome to worship with us on Sunday morning. But no, we try not to have a conference on the Lord's Day if we can help it.
That, ladies and gentlemen, did you just hear that? Well, I was not even expecting that answer. Perhaps I should have expected it, knowing the source and knowing the organization, a fine Christian organization and a fine Christian man in Michael Hill, the kind of strong, muscular Christian, both mentally and physically, that we will need to lead God's people into an uncertain future. But there on Sunday, they will be worshiping the Lord Jesus Christ, and you can do that with them and us next week. So that's what's going to be going on Sunday. When does everything kick off on Friday? That'll be my last question about the conference. When should people arrive?
Registration begins at 8 o'clock on Friday morning, 8 to 9. And our first speaker will kick off shortly after 9 o'clock on Friday morning. And we go all day Friday, and then we go all day Saturday. And, you know, after hours, you know, people hang around the building usually and visit and you know, socialize, and we've got places that people can go out, you know, eat, drink, be merry, and all. So, yeah, it's pretty much people come in on Thursday night, you know, get up bright and early on Friday morning, ready to go.
All right. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That's, you've heard a little bit about the agenda, but you know the timeline and the schedule there a little bit better now. We want to see you next weekend there in Alabama, and we'll talk more with Michael Hill about his book when we come back.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Each week, the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
All right. Well, you just heard, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Michael Hill lay out a little more information about the League of the South's annual conference, which is taking place next weekend. By about this time next week, as a matter of fact, if you're listening live, it'll be just about wrapped up, except for the Sunday morning worship service and the after-hours fellowship on Saturday night. A little bit different schedule from your typical conference template. A lot of conferences start on Friday evening, run all day Saturday and through Sunday morning. The League of the South prefers to keep the Sabbath holy, as we all should. And so their conferences run from Friday morning through Saturday night, and then there's a basically a church service on Sunday morning. So keep that in mind if you're still contemplating whether or not to come. And I know from our advertising, the Nationalist Solutions Conference on TPC, quite a few people joined us at the event last weekend that perhaps would not have otherwise. So we want you to come out to Alabama as well. And if you are thinking about coming, we want to be sure to impress upon you the deviation from the normal conference schedule that they have down there. So that being said, now, without further ado, a lot of times when you interview somebody for the first time on the radio, you interview them about their book. Well, then if you like them, you maybe strike up a friendship with them or an acquaintanceship at first, and it evolves into a friendship. And certainly there have been many cases like that where that has been what's happened in my career here as a radio host. But Michael Hill has been a friend for a long, long time, so we're actually going back, going backwards on that as well. And we're going back to his book now. And I can't believe we've never talked about it before. But he sent me an advanced copy of this book, and it is really an interesting read on a whole lot of levels. And we've given some information about the book, and he's written two. We'll talk about both of them tonight, but the one we're going to focus on right now is the one that we're offering as a fundraising incentive. It's entitled Celtic Warfare. And well, I'll let Dr. Hill tell us about the book. Michael, take it in any direction you'd like, and I've, of course, got some follow-up questions.
Okay, James. It covers actually from the late 16th century to the middle of the 18th century, 1595 to 1763. And actually, this book was an expansion of my PhD dissertation. I spent a good deal of time in Great Britain, Scotland, and Ireland, particularly Northern Ireland, to do research in the early 80s, and I've talked about my experiences in Ireland other than doing some research. But I was over there in part to do some research, and I did the research for this book and the subsequent book I wrote. But, it was designed, first of all, to be my PhD dissertation, where, the last thing I did to earn my degree. But even before I had to defend this as a PhD dissertation, I shopped it around to the premier publisher in Edinburgh, Scotland, John Donald Publishers, who published all kind of great stuff on Scottish history, because I wanted to see if they would be interested in it as a book, and I wanted to start at the top. Well, I sent them the manuscript the old-fashioned way, put it in the mail, send it overseas, airmail. And lo and behold, about a month later, I got a letter from the head of the publishing company there, and he said, "Man, we love this. We'd like to publish it." And so it actually got published into a book before I defended it as a PhD dissertation. And I can say this now that I'm no longer a professor at the University of Alabama, but hell, it made some of my older colleagues a little bit jealous. Because, some of them had never had a book published, and here was this young pup here, getting his PhD dissertation published as his first book back in 1986. And, I was still in my 30s then, so it's been a long time ago that I wrote this book. But I've sold a lot of copies of it. I have the copyright to it now, and I've been selling copies personally myself, probably for the last 15 or 20 years. But I had fun writing it. It's a book basically about the strategy, tactics, logistics of the warfare of the Scots and Irish from the 1590s, when the Irish were fighting to keep Elizabeth's England from overrunning the island, Queen Elizabeth, to the Scottish participation in the French and Indian Wars here in North America. So it looks at this particular thing called Celtic warfare, and it kind of breaks it down and shows how our people have fought over a period of roughly 200 years, a very formative period in our history as a people. And it also, in the very end, touches on the similarities between how our Celtic ancestors fought up until 1763, and how our southern ancestors fought in the war between the states. And prior to me publishing this book, Grady McQuinney, who was one of my professors, who unfortunately passed away a few years ago, had written a book basically about applying the Celtic warfare template to the way the Confederate armies fought. It was called Attack and Die, Civil War Military Tactics and the Celtic Heritage, or something like that. So I kind of wrote the prequel, if you will, to Grady's book, and then he and Forrest MacDonald, my other principal professor, wrote a book on the Celts and the South called Cracker Culture, which was a pretty well-known book, and it sold a lot of copies and got them on television to talk about this so-called racist theory of Southern history that they had. So, this whole thing about writing about the Celts has been attacked by the mainstream media and academia since its inception back in the late 70s, early 80s, when I was doing my research on this. So it's not without controversy, James, because it distinguishes white people, a particular branch of white people, Southerners, from everybody else, and kind of gives us a distinctive mark. And, of course, anything that has a positive impact on the way people see us white Southerners, there are certain elements out there that do not like that. And I experienced that at the beginning of my career. But it was a fun book to write. It's a little bit on the academic side, although I tried to spice it up a little bit with some good military terminology and a description of battles and things like that. But if you're interested in how the Celts fought during this 200-year period, basically when firearms and gunpowder was introduced into the equation, it's really an informative book. I did a lot of good research on it and had fun writing it, and there is a lot in it if you like this subject. I sometimes give a copy from time to time to friends, and I always preface that by saying, now, you really don't have to read this if you are not really interested in the details of it. And they'll smile and say, oh, yeah, I'll read it. But, you know, I realize that it's not for everybody. But, man, if you like Celtic history and you like military stuff, it's a book that I think you'll enjoy.
Well, and certainly the listeners of this program should enjoy it, because this is who we are. You asked the title of my talk for the League of the South meeting next week, and it's the title of it is It's Personal.
That's
so I know you had to have a lot of fun writing this book, because this wasn't just something that was an assignment. This was something that you chose, and I'm sure that you enjoyed writing about the Celts, because that is, of course, who we are. We didn't just spring up from out of the ground in the American South in the 1700s. We came from somewhere, and this is where we came from. This is who we were. If you go back far enough into our line, we come from this part of the world, the windswept Northern Isles of Britannia. And we'll talk a little bit more about that with Dr. Michael Hill as we continue to explore his book, Celtic Warfare, here on TPC. Stay tuned, everybody.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
My brother and two other boys were the ones that got in the car with her, and she was drunk. The road that goes to her house is like really windy, and she was taking that road at 80 to 100 miles per hour and hit into the road barriers. Her door flung open. She ran out across the street to get away from it, and the other three boys were trapped in it, and the car exploded. And then when my mom found out about it, she called me at work. I don't care what you have to do, just get up here to the hospital. You know, I parked my car and I went inside, and they took us back to this little room. My mom told me that Jay had been killed, and I lost it. The other people, so they're like, well, you can drink, but just be careful when you drink, you know? So I don't want anything to do with it, because it took my brother away from me.
A public service message from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com, or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Dr. Michael Hill is our guest. Celtic Warfare is the book we are talking about, and he's giving you a little bit more information this evening about the book and what led him to write it, and all good things, of course. A two-part question for you, Michael, right here, right now. And there's more I want to talk to you about concerning this book before we run out of time. We've only got 30 minutes left, so I've got to make haste. I was mentioning that this is who we are, and this is where our people came from. I'd like for you to talk a little bit more about that, why people listening to the program tonight, we have people listening to this show from all over the world, still people over there in the land of the Celts listening this evening, from Europe, from Northwestern Europe. Talk a little bit more about why this is a book that they should be interested in. And after you answer that, I would like you to also tell us why you chose that particular period of Celtic warfare to shine a light on. Certainly with regards to Celtic warfare, you could have gone back many hundreds of years before Christ and written a book, but you chose the years 1595 through 1763 specifically in this book. So two-part question, why those years and why should people be interested in the contents of this book?
Well, anyone who certainly is of Celtic ancestry, I think, will be interested in this because it will give them some insight as to what their people have had to face. And one of the reasons that I chose this period, James, is because this was a period in which Celtic warfare began a transition. I could have focused on the pre-gunpowder era, where everything was done nice and up close and personal with blades and, you know, well, from a distance with arrows, of course, but the Celts, for the most part, fought up close with blades, blade weapons, swords, spears, shield walls, you know, things such as that. But I was interested in this period, in what we might call the early modern period here, because you had this transition from blade weapons to firearms, gunpowder weapons. And obviously, when you have a fierce reputation as fighters like the Celts, it's interesting to see what this new how this new technology will have an impact on their tactics, their strategy, their logistics. And I thought that was fascinating because the thing that fascinated me most was how they took the old weapons and incorporated them into a strategy and particularly tactics that use the new weapons, the gunpowder weapons, and how they use them so well together. And kind of the highlight of the whole book is the development of something called the Celtic Charge or the Highland Charge, to give it its original and accurate name, where the firearms, and a lot of these firearms obviously were muskets and not rifles, so they were not really that accurate, except at close distance. They threw up a lot of gunpowder smoke and made a lot of noise, but they really weren't that accurate from much of a distance. And our ancestors were smart enough to say, well, you know, how do we want to use these things? So what they did is they would have their swords. By this time, they had gone to a one-handed broadsword to replace the old two-handed claymore, and a target or shield, a round wooden shield. And they would take those firearms and they would advance to the enemy and fire one shot in order to sow confusion in the enemy, you know, all that lead flying at them and all that smoke, and preferably, you know, with the wind behind them, blowing that smoke into the enemy. And then they would throw those weapons down, those firearms down, and pull those primitive cold steel, James, and give a shout like the rebel yell and charge into the enemy and finish them off the old-fashioned way with cold steel. So they confused them with the hot lead and the smoke, threw them into confusion and chaos, and they finished them off charging into them, screaming at the top of their lungs with that cold steel and those broadswords. So the way that they used these two elements, the old and the new, in their tactics was unstoppable on the battlefields of Great Britain until the Battle of Culloden in April of 1746, when the British finally figured out a way to counter these tactics of the Highland Charge. But another reason I think that people of Celtic ancestry ought to be really interested in this is not only the people involved, but all these battles that I discuss in this book, with the exception of what was fought over here in the French and Indian War, were fought in Ireland or Scotland, and they would be very familiar with the places. I've traveled all over both of those places, seen all the places up close and personal that I've written about, and it just brings it home to you. Now, you know, I was not born there, and I don't live there, but, man, when I got there, it resonated with me as home because of my ancestral memory and all the research I'd done about the history and who these people were. But it just can't help but affect you, James, if you have any Celtic blood at all in you, to read about these exciting stories and to think about, well, wow, all this happened in this relatively small geographic area there.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, people, I think, lose sight of how small Great Britain is, what is now known as the United Kingdom, I guess you could say. That is not a big landmass for all of this fighting and all of these centuries of warfare to have taken place, and my goodness, at the wonderful wars that there were. I actually had, to the extent that war can be wonderful, but for men of a fighting line, perhaps they are. I literally got a smile came across my face as I heard you verbally illustrate the way that they mixed the gunpowder with that cold steel, as you put it, and it just brought a smile to my face to hear you put it that way. And even though you're focusing on a 200-year period of Celtic warfare in this book, from the late 1500s to the late 1700s, you do tie this in on how so much is passed down through genetic predisposition, through our traditions, our traits, our culture, our heritage. Our Confederate ancestors fought in some similar fashion. Of course, Stonewall Jackson was well known for loving the cold steel of a bayonet, and he trained his men to give them the bayonet. And you talk in your book, you write in your book about how in some ways this helped, and it both helped and hurt the Confederate cause during Lincoln's War. And you get into that in the book, don't you, Dr. Hill?
Yeah, absolutely, because, see, by the time of the war between the states, or the war for Southern independence, both sides were armed with rifled weapons. And rifled weapons are very different from muskets, smoothbore weapons. Smoothbore weapons are not very accurate, except in very close range. But a rifled weapon is. And if you start charging an enemy who's armed with muskets, you can get pretty close to them before they can really start doing a lot of damage to you with those muskets. But if you charge an enemy like at Gettysburg that is equipped with rifled weapons, which are much more accurate at a longer distance, you can start picking people off before they can get anywhere close to you. And that's kind of what happened is in the war between the states, the technology outpaced our traditional Celtic tactics, and the South paid the price in blood by, you know, the charge. And Southern boys always wanted to attack. I mean, they did not want to sit on the defensive. They wanted to attack and take the war to the enemy, and they paid a high price for it because of the changed technology and weaponry. South probably would have been better off if it had fought a completely defensive warfare. But, man, that was just not the nature of our men. You know, they're aggressive. They want to attack. It's almost like, you know, everything could be settled by one roll of the dice in that charge, you know, like at Gettysburg or various other places. And that's heroic, and it makes, you know, makes for great poetry and stories. But sometimes it's not the smartest thing to do to win. And I think if the South had adopted maybe some different tactics, maybe we could have fought the North to a stalemate and got our independence. I don't know, but it's an interesting proposition. But there's just something about that heroic fighting method of the Celts that captures your imagination. It's the stuff of legend. It's the stuff of poetry, the stuff of stories. And that's just the kind of people we are, very romantic, warrior poet-type people, and it's just the way we fight. Sometimes
it's the way we die.
Sometimes we put it on the line like that and suffer for it, but we always get our money's worth.
Don't we for sure, Dr. Hill, don't we for sure? And again, we're talking about this because our heroes here in the South, Lee, Jackson, Forrest, these were Celts. These were Celts not too long, and for them, certainly not in the too distant past. That's what they were. And even today, in the current year, 2018, that's still who we are. I love how Dr. Hill put it just a moment ago, his ancestral memory. I'm absolutely engrossed. I hope you are as fascinated with what you're hearing as I am, because, folks, I'm really enjoying this. We're going to wrap it up right after this.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Getting the kids to school, cleaning the house, doing the laundry. It seems that the work routine as a stay-at-home mom is never ending. And even though I'm the prime grocery shopper in our family of four, I simply don't have time to scrutinize all the labels on the countless food products I buy. Oh, sure, I've noticed all the latest certification seals. Organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It definitely seems to be the latest craze. But it was only recently that kosher certification seals caught my attention. You see, my husband had me download an app called Kosher-tify, and it shed light on a century-old certification industry that slipped under the radar screen from the majority of our public. I also noticed a question mark at the end of the app name, and that makes great sense, as there's far more questions regarding this industry than answers. In fact, the developers refer to this as the kosher question. Sure, I'm a busy mom and didn't pay attention to our food culture, but now I have transparency, a convenient grocery list feature, and the ability to eat in favor of my family's best interests, and you can discover it too at thekosherquestion.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm looking at my notes here. We have one segment remaining, and I still wanted to talk with Dr. Hill about his second book. That's going to have to wait to another show. I actually want to talk to him more about his time as a professor at the University of Alabama. I bet you he's got some stories he could tell us about that particular chapter in his life. I'd sure love to hear more about it. Maybe we'll do that in private and see what we can put on the radio.
Not sir. I'm not sure.
Well, he is a man that has lived a full life, and he's still got a lot of fight and a lot of years left in him if Jesus tarries. I do too. And anyway, so he's written another book. We don't want to confuse you. This is the book. The book we're talking about is the one that we're offering to Faithful supporters who contribute $100 or more before the end of the month, they're going to be autographed. So that makes them, of course, very special and unique to begin with. And then in addition to the autograph, you're going to get a great book. It is Celtic Warfare. That's what we're talking about with its author, Dr. Michael Hill. I had so much more I wanted to get into, but we're not going to have time. But I do want to read this, and this is just something that was on the, I believe it was the Amazon page. But it's a good little synopsis, and this is what it reads. The book provides a comprehensive study of the way in which the Celtic people fought and the weapons that they used. Since earliest times, the strategy and tactics of the Celts in battle has exhibited a continuity over the centuries that is quite surprising. The most important aspect of the continuity in Celtic warfare was the tactical offensive. Up to 1689, this was based largely on the renowned, undisciplined, and fearsome broadsword attack, which regularly dominated the battlefield against more conventional armies. Better led, trained, and equipped British forces after the state, however, quickly learned to withstand and overcome the Highland Charge, which reached its disastrous nadir at Culloden. Dr. Hill's study of the tactical, strategic, and logistical aspects of the Celtic warfare analyzes the and ascendants of modern conventional warfare in detail and should be of interest to all concerned. Now, this is where I want you to pay close attention. This book should be of interest to all concerned with the study of military history and the history of Ireland, Scotland, England, and North America. The book will also help you better understand the Confederacy's military strategy during the war between the states. So that's just a little nutshell synopsis of the book, but I want to go back to something you said just a moment ago. You have spent time in that part of the world. I have been to Europe, but I have not been to the part of Europe where our people came from. I spent some time in Germany, been to some other places in the world, but I have not yet set foot in Scotland or in Ireland or Wales or England. I think if I set foot in rural Scotland, I would feel absolutely at home in spite of the fact that I was not born there and I've never traveled there. And I think that's something you were sharing with us just a moment ago. And that's why I think when you read a book like this, it connects you to your past. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so excited to be offering this book and giving it a little more exposure.
It does, James. I walked that battlefield at Culloden Moor, where the Highland Charge was finally and irrevocably broken. On April the 16th, 1746, my ancestors actually fought there for the Highland clans under Bonnie Prince Charlie. And after that, those who escaped and, escaped imprisonment fled to North America and settled the South, my ancestors included. This is really, well, to steal your speech title, it's personal to me. When I was walking Culloden Moor on that battlefield, I was out there, there, I don't think there were any other people on the battlefield that day, and it was an overcast gray day like some of them are in the Highlands like that. It was just a perfect day for it, but I could feel that ancestral memory there, James. I mean, it was strong. It was very strong, and I don't think you can experience that in a part of the world in which you have no connections to, but a part of the world that you do, my friend, you can feel it. And feeling it like that is indescribable. I mean, you can read things, you can rationally understand them, but until you feel it in your bones, in your blood, and my kindred spirit out there knows what I'm talking about, it's just not the same. And that's why I encourage you, sir, to go if you can, because you're going to feel something that you can't feel anywhere else. And I did that, and I would take nothing for it. I can still remember how it felt to this very day, and it makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. And all of that was enhanced, of course, because I knew what had happened there. I knew why it had happened. I knew it down to detail. But that's the kind of thing that this book will help you to understand. And if you have that Celtic blood, it'll help you to get a picture of who your ancestors were and what they fought for, how they fought, why they fought, and how they brought all that over here with them, and why our blood today is still a fighting blood, my friend, and that's why we are fighting against all these forces, even today in 2018, that are trying to take away our civilization and destroy our people. because we have that fighting spirit that I've outlined in this book, and God forbid that we ever lose it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I don't think this – I knew it was going to be a fun hour. This was an hour I've been looking forward to for – we've been working to get Dr. Hill back on the show. He has travel conflicts. We have scheduling conflicts, so we've been working to get him on to promote this book for a few weeks now. And I knew this was an interview I was looking forward to for the reasons that we just stated, because this is who we are. This is our ancestry. This is – if you're from the South, you came from somewhere around there, most likely. Most likely. And right. I don't think this could have gone any better. And I don't think Dr. Hill could have done a better job talking about his book. You saw that just how effortlessly and free-flowing the details poured out of his mouth and onto the radio airwaves this evening. And if we still haven't convinced you to check into this book, I don't think there's anything that we can do otherwise that will make that happen. But we do want you to have a copy of this book. And he received the shipment today. He's going to be autographing them this week. And I'm going to go down there and pick them up personally when I speak to the League of the South's annual convention next weekend. So we'll have a great show from Alabama next week, live from that conference. We were in Nashville last week. A lot of travel, a lot of stuff happening. We're busy and we're on the front lines. But these people, the people that you read about in this book, these are the true heroes. These were the people who were really on the front lines.
That's
and we
right.
need to know about them. We need to learn about them. We need to honor them. And the least we can do is read about them because, again, as I said, if we allow our enemies to separate us from our history and our heroes and our ancestors, then you've already lost. You're already dead. We do never need to lose that connection with our past because that, of course, dictates our future. And so, again, $100 or more to TPC. Donate it before the end of the month, and you're going to get one of these signed copies that we've been talking about. And I want to thank you again, my good friend, Dr. Michael Hill, for making yourself available for us an hour this evening to talk about this book. I am so glad that we're working together to get it out to this particular audience.
Yes, sir. James, it's always my pleasure to be on your show, and I'll do anything I can to help you and your fine radio program to survive and to thrive, because you provide a valuable service and a very entertaining service to our people. And speaking of entertaining, I had a good time writing this book. I won't lie, you know. It was fun. It was a lot of fun doing the research, being over there, and, you know, it was like reliving all these things inside my head as I was writing them. And I think it'll be a fun read for your listening audience out there.
Well, I can guarantee you it is, ladies and gentlemen, because I received my advance copy a few weeks ago, and I consumed it and inhaled it, and we don't just pick whatever's out there to offer you in one of our quarterly fundraising incentives. Each of our gifts that we offer is something that we put some thought into and something that we think is a perfect fit for this audience. And this book should have been offered years ago. Again, it was just one of the most remarkable oversights I've ever had in my life. But I'm glad we're able to rectify it. And this is something that you will enjoy. We wouldn't offer it to you otherwise. Dr. Hill, can't wait to see you next week. Stay safe, travel safe, and I'll be with you in Alabama in a few days, my friend.
Looking forward to it, my brother. Looking forward to it. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Thank you. God bless. And we'll see you shortly. Dr. Michael Hill, everybody, president of the League of the South. And, man, do we still have a lot to talk about. We barely scratched the surface of this book, much less the second book. And I still want to know more about his stories from his time as a professor at the University of Alabama. But nevertheless, we're out of time for tonight. You know the fundraising incentive. You know how to donate. We have not been doing what we normally do, which is read out the roll call of all the cities that have been sending in their support and all of our listeners from all of these different ports of call. But it is a growing list once again this quarter. But we have just not done as much fundraising as we normally do because we've been so busy. There's been so many attacks and so much going on. But tonight we're trying to emphasize that a little bit more because we only have a week left. And boy, is it not summertime. It is not summertime. 2 days ago, June 21st, that was the summer equinox, the longest day of the year. Thank God we are now moving back towards wintertime. Officially, each day is going to be a little shorter than the day before, and we're going to get back to winter and that cold weather. Talk about ancestral memory. I must remember the cold climates that our people grew in during the ice ages, and this heat has never taken to me, but I do like the summer. It's time for Beach Boys music. My birthday, Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, everybody. We're a week late on that, but the heat, I'll pretend I'm still in Scotland for that. Okay, everybody, we'll see you next week. God bless you. Good night.